Join us now for Health for Life, brought to you by Hamilton Healthcare System. Today, we're talking with Dr. Ganesh Ashwath of Hamilton Physician Group in Dalton. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Ashwath.
Glad to be here.
Dr. Ashwath, a board-certified gastroenterologist at Hamilton Physician Group, located at 302 Point North Place, behind the Social Security Administration building off of Chattanooga Avenue in Dalton, Georgia. He, Dr. Albert, Dr. LaFontaine, and Dr. Marcatus specialize in digestive issues that affect the esophagus, stomach, intestines, liver, gallbladder, pancreas, and colon. So, Dr. Ashwath, how long have you been with Hamilton?
I've been here for a little more than 2 years now. This is my third year in Dalton.
Third year in Dalton. Tell us about Hamilton Physician Group Gastroenterology.
So, Hamilton Physician Group has four gastroenterologists, myself, Dr. Albert, Dr. Mercatus, and Dr. LaFontaine. We've all been in this area for a while, especially Dr. Mercatus and Dr. LaFontaine have been here for more than 15 to 20 years. And the four of us deal with diseases related to the stomach, liver, pancreas, colon, and to some extent, gallbladder and biliary disease as well. We also, are very familiar with dealing with gastroesophageal reflux or heartburn and, esophageal problems.
Now, heartburn has turned out to be a big problem, it seems like, just here in the last few years.
Almost all over the country. And a lot of it has to do with our diets, changing, body habits, with people getting more obese, and also things like smoking and all that definitely are contributing to the increase.
Well, do you feel like that carrying extra weight attributes to heartburn?
That is one of the very well-known risk factors for heartburn. And losing weight definitely helps in making the symptoms better.
I understand. Now, colonoscopies, you guys do that also at your office, correct?
Yes. That is almost about 50% of our practice is screening colonoscopies, as well as diagnostic and therapeutic colonoscopies. What that means is, screening is when you don't have a problem, but we are looking for colon cancer, and therapeutic is when you have a problem like bleeding or a blockage, and we have to do a colonoscopy for treating that. So we do both of them at our practice.
I understand. You're looking a lot of times, if there's not a blockage, you're looking for things like polyps that could be precancerous polyps?
That is correct.
Okay, there's a lot of important topics to cover today. Since you mentioned colonoscopies, let's start with that. Colon cancer has been in the news lately after the unfortunate passing of Chadwick Boseman, the actor who starred in the movie Black Panther and 42. He died of cancer at the age of 42. While we don't know the details of his battle with cancer, we do know that he was diagnosed at the age of only 38.
Yes, that's right. Colon cancer is one of the most common cancers in the whole world, definitely in the U.S. About 1 in 22 to about 1 in 24 people are diagnosed with colon cancer over their lifetime. So that is one of, that is fairly good odds that one person might have colon cancer. It's expected to take about 53,000 lives this year. If you have a family history of colon cancer, the chances of you getting it at a younger age are much more, but usually we do recommend everybody to get a screening, colonoscopy, or alternate forms of screening starting at age 50.
I understand at age 50. Of course, some people with a family history might want to do that earlier, I'm sure.
That is right. And that is one very important thing, especially as we can see in the case of Chadwick. If you have certain types of genetic syndromes that run in the family, you might be somebody who has to start colon cancer screening at 18 or even 25. Though those conditions are pretty rare, if you hear something about multiple people in your family having an abdominal cancer or specifically colon cancer, it is a good idea to talk to your primary doctor about it so that they can make a referral to the gastroenterologist if needed to start screening earlier than 50.
Well, now, why do you think that so many younger people seem to be getting colon cancer? Do you think it's a diet?
Partly it might be the diet and lifestyle, but a lot of it might have to do with the genetics, as well as we do see some aspects of the whole disease process has been changing over the last few decades. Now, we don't see a lot of cancer in the older people because after screening was introduced a few decades ago, a lot of colon cancer in the older people has been prevented. So when you look at the percentage, it looks like the younger people are getting more colon cancer, but in reality, it might just be that, you know, the older people are getting lesser colon cancer.
Well, that's very good. It's not, maybe it's not more younger people, but less older people, you're saying.
Maybe a combination of both, but it is very important if you have a genetic syndrome to watch out for symptoms even when you're younger than 50.
I understand. What's some of the common signs that a person might have colon cancer?
The most important thing I wanted to mention today was colon cancer can be completely asymptomatic. Oftentimes, patients come for their regular screening colonoscopy and I can find an early colon cancer. And that is why we do the screening colonoscopy in healthy people. However, if you do have any of these symptoms, like a change in your bowel habits, maybe diarrhea, maybe constipation, if you see any blood in your stool, if you see black color stool, if you have non-specific abdominal symptoms, like say you're having an abdominal pain that comes and goes, you don't know what exactly brings it on, or if you feel like you're not emptying your bowels right, if you see a change in how your stool looks, if it looks narrower, if it looks just different than what you're used to your entire life, that might be a symptom of colon cancer. Also, if it's advanced, you can have weight loss and you can have anemia, which is low blood count, which can cause weakness and fatigue.
Now, what does a person's family history have to do with colon cancer?
So if you have a first degree relative or two second degree relatives, and when I say second degree, that means uncles, cousins, and first degree is like parents and siblings, then your chance for colon cancer is definitely higher, and you might have to start getting screened sooner. Like, you cannot wait till 50 for your first colonoscopy. Now, as I mentioned earlier, if you have multiple relatives with colon cancer, there are some syndromes that we look for, and those syndromes can cause you to have colon cancer at a very young age, like in your 20s and 30s even. And that's why it's important to talk about a family history with at least your primary doctor, if not gastroenterologist, to make sure that you don't fit criteria for one of these syndromes.
Very good information, Dr. Ashworth. I appreciate that. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to talk about colon cancer and more about colonoscopies coming up next.
Caring like a family, fighting like an army. Hamilton Healthcare System is here for you. Armed with a love for our community, advanced care, and personalized service, our commitment to serve with compassion stands strong in this season of uncertainty. You are the heart of all we do. Visit us at hamiltonhealth.com for timely health information and updates. If you're in need of medical care, don't delay. Your health won't wait. Hamilton Medical Center is ready to care for you. We are following CDC guidelines. Patients and guests are screened for COVID-19 symptoms. Those who are suspected to have the virus are treated in a separate area. Plus, Hamilton's high-powered UV light robots eliminate 99.9% of bacteria and viruses on surfaces. Please do not delay medical care. Your health won't wait. As always, Hamilton is here for you.
We're back with Dr. Ashworth. We're talking about colon cancer and colonoscopies. What exactly is the process that you go through whenever you go in for colon cancer screening, colonoscopy, things like that?
Okay, so after you have discussed with your primary doctor or your gastroenterologist and you have been told that you need a colonoscopy, the preparation for this procedure entails drinking a fluid that cleans out your colon so that we can get a good look inside. You will come to our endoscopy center where we take you in, put an IV, and give you a medication through your IV that puts you to good sleep and so that you don't feel any of this procedure. We pass a little thin camera tube about the size of my little finger, you know, from the rectum all the way into your colon, and we look for any cancer, polyps, inflammation, or lesions that can bleed. If there is a cancer, we will take biopsies and send it to the lab for assessment. If there is a polyp, on the other hand, which can grow into cancer, most of the times I am able to take that out with the endoscope itself. So it's kind of a one-stop shop for looking as well as treating polyps, as well as a diagnostic test or a test to look for anything more advanced. And if I do see something more advanced, I will send you to a surgeon in the next few days and who will plan for a surgery.
I understand. So you go, you get the IV, you get the medicine. It makes you very sleepy. Do you actually go to sleep?
You go to a complete sleep. You will not even know that you had the procedure done in most cases.
Is that right? And so how long does the procedure usually take?
It can take anywhere between 15 minutes to an hour, depending on how many polyps you have and how difficult an individual's colon is to pass the scope inside. But on an average, I would say 15 to 30 minutes.
I got you. I understand. Is it common to find polyps?
It is very common to find polyps, and that is our intention, to find it when it's still a polyp so that we can take it out and prevent that from becoming cancer.
Now, a lot of people don't know what a polyp is. Is that like a skin tag? Is that what that would be?
That would be the closest thing you can compare it to. It's like a skin tag inside the colon, except that these things have a potential to become malignant or cancerous, in other words.
I understand. After the procedure is over, mm-hmm. you won't remember what happened. You experience no pain, nothing like that.
No. So Bandy Endoscopy Center, which is our new endoscopy center, has some of the state-of-the-art equipment. We do it under complete anesthesia, which is very good. The waking up time is very short, and you know, most of the patients don't even feel groggy after the wake up. We also use carbon dioxide instead of regular air to insufflate the colon. Why that is important is because when you do that, the feeling of cramping and all that decreases a lot compared to the older process of colonoscopy where they used to use regular air. So most people go back, go on their way home, they go stop at a steakhouse, eat a good meal, and everything's fine and dandy after that.
Is that right? Well, I've talked to a lot of people who have had them. They say that there's nothing to it. They dread doing it, and then once they've done it, they say there's nothing to it.
Right. If somebody came and told me before I went into medicine that somebody's going to do something like this, I would say absolutely not. But, you know, the reality of it is it's a very safe procedure. It's a very simple procedure. It's not painful. The benefits definitely outweigh all the little inconveniences that you have.
And whenever you drink, now the fluid that you drink that the night before?
Usually, yes. The afternoon before and the night before, you might have a little rough time because you have to clean out your colon. Mm-hmm. Some of the preparations have improved in the last few years, but still, I wouldn't say that's the most pleasant part of it all. But that's the most necessary part, because if your preparation is not clean, I will not be able to say that you didn't have small polyps and things like that, which in turn will make me want to say you need to come back sooner than 10 years for your repeat colonoscopy.
I understand. So at the age of 50, that's a good idea. That's when you need to start thinking about this, unless you have a family history or you find something that makes you think maybe it is time I need to be looked at.
Correct. Correct. If you have any symptoms, sooner. If not, at the age of 50. And then every 10 years after that, if everything is normal.
A lot of our listeners are going to be thinking about COVID-19. They don't want to get involved in a hospital situation with COVID-19. How safe is it to get a colonoscopy now as people are talking about and thinking about COVID-19?
So, yes, that's a good question. And at our endoscopy center, we have been practicing all the precautionary measures from the start of COVID. We have been taking extra precautions in cleaning all the patient care areas before and after each patient. We are spacing out the appointments. We are screening every patient and the visitor that comes into the endoscopy center by taking their temperatures and a questionnaire. After that, we are using the latest germ zapping robots to sterilize our rooms as well.
If you're in need of medical care, don't delay. Your health won't wait. Hamilton Medical Center is ready to care for you. We are following CDC guidelines. Patients and guests are screened for COVID-19 symptoms. Those who are suspected to have the virus are treated in a separate area. Plus, Hamilton's high-powered UV light robots eliminate 99.9% of bacteria and viruses on surfaces. Please do not delay medical care. Your health won't wait. As always, Hamilton is here for you. Caring like a family, fighting like an army. Hamilton Healthcare System is here for you. Armed with a love for our community, advanced care, and personalized service, our commitment to serve with compassion stands strong in this season of uncertainty. You are the heart of all we do. Visit us at hamiltonhealth.com for timely health information and updates.
We're back. We're talking about many things here, colonoscopies, colon cancer. You also mentioned that liver disease is something that you treat. You see a lot of liver disease or different types of liver disease. Tell me about liver disease and what people need to be looking for when it comes to liver disease.
So liver disease is very common, especially in my practice in this area. I have seen there is a lot of liver disease in the community that gets diagnosed very late after the people have cirrhosis. You might have heard about cirrhosis. You might have heard about alcoholic liver disease, hepatitis C, fatty liver disease. And all these things can eventually, you know, cause liver cirrhosis and even death from that. Now, we tend to treat a broad variety of liver diseases here, especially hepatitis C, hepatitis B. We are very comfortable treating that. We also take care of a lot of cirrhotic population, and the cirrhosis patients are somebody who need care regularly, you know, in, as opposed to when they have problems, to prevent these problems. Mm-hmm. So we take care of all that here. One important thing that I want to mention is a lot of fatty liver disease has been emerging in the last few years all over the country, and definitely in this area as well. Now, fatty liver disease was something that was taken lightly before, but not anymore, because it's one of the leading causes of liver disease, liver cirrhosis, in fact, as well as the cause of liver transplantation. So if I am able to see the fatty liver disease patient early in their disease process, I might be able to educate them about a few lifestyle things, as well as prescribe a few medications that can halt their fatty liver disease from turning into liver cirrhosis. So, yes, I mean, it is very important for people to ask their primary doctor about their liver, if they have a fatty liver, if they need to do anything specific, and if you have a family history of liver disease, definitely ask that question sooner.
So a fatty liver, you're talking about, is that a lifestyle change when it comes to drinking, or does that when it comes to eating fatty foods? I don't understand.
Excellent question. Fatty liver is seen both in people who drink a lot of alcohol as well as in people who are obese and have diabetes. But we don't exactly know why some people develop fatty liver and some people don't. However, it has become more and more common as the obesity and diabetes numbers raise. And it is basically, to put it in simple terms, accumulation of fat in the liver that causes inflammation, that causes scarring, and that scarring can progress to liver cirrhosis.
How would, is it a blood test that you take to look at that?
There are a few blood tests and imaging tests, like an ultrasound of the liver, can help us make that diagnosis. Along with that, you will need to put it in perspective and see what your other problems are. Like, for example, if you have diabetes and if you have a liver that looks abnormal, that patient should definitely be evaluated for any treatment options, as well as you mentioned, diet, weight loss, and changes like that to the lifestyle.
Yeah, you're talking, and then also a lot of alcohol.
Correct. Alcohol, a lot of people underestimate how much alcohol we consume, and that is one of the most leading causes of liver disease in this area as well. So it's important to, you know, get checked out and make sure that you don't have a liver that's already in the stages of getting damaged.
And one more quick question about liver disease before we go on. I know that you read the journals, and you know, I'm sure you know people in other parts of the country. Does it seem like in the South or Southeast that we have more liver disease or more fatty liver issues than in other places?
I do not have the numbers on me right now, but I can tell you that in my practice, I am seeing it a lot more than I really want to. Almost every day I see about 3 to 4 patients with this.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. And new patients?
New patients.
Very interesting. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about hepatitis B and C. So don't go away.
Caring like a family, fighting like an army. Hamilton Healthcare System is here for you. Armed with a love for our community, advanced care, and personalized service, our commitment to serve with compassion stands strong in this season of uncertainty. You are the heart of all we do. Visit us at hamiltonhealth.com for timely health information and updates. If you're in need of medical care, don't delay. Your health won't wait. Hamilton Medical Center is ready to care for you. We are following CDC guidelines. Patients and guests are screened for COVID-19 symptoms. Those who are suspected to have the virus are treated in a separate area. Plus, Hamilton's high-powered UV light robots eliminate 99.9% of bacteria and viruses on surfaces. Please do not delay medical care. Your health won't wait. As always, Hamilton is here for you.
And we're back. We're talking with Dr. Ganesh Ashwath, and we're talking about diseases of the liver. We're talking about colonoscopies. We're talking about colon cancer. One of the things that I wanted to talk about while you were here was hepatitis B, hepatitis C. Do you see a lot of that around here? And if so, what is that? And what do we need to do if we think we have that, or what are some of the symptoms?
Hepatitis B, C, and to some extent hepatitis A, these are all viruses that can affect your liver and cause liver damage in the long run. Hepatitis A is an infection that usually comes and goes. You don't need to worry too much about that. But if you have symptoms of yellowness of your eyes and skin, that might be something you need to be checked out for. Hepatitis B and C, you get it through using IV needles or getting a blood transfusion before the 1980s or early 1990s, and sometimes through sexual contact. Now, hepatitis B and C can be in your liver for a long time and cause damage very slowly, leading to liver cirrhosis. Hepatitis C did not have a lot of effective treatments until about 6 to 7 years ago. And, you know, people used to progress to liver cirrhosis. But now we have amazing treatments for hepatitis C, which are basically medications that you take anywhere between 8 and 12 weeks and completely cure it. Therefore, you know, your chance of going to liver cirrhosis or liver cancer is reduced. Hepatitis B is something which is a little more difficult to treat. People have to be on treatment for this for usually the rest of their life. And it is still oral medications. And it is definitely worth doing that, because otherwise they can run the risk of developing liver cancer as well as liver cirrhosis.
I understand. But there is a cure for hepatitis C.
There is a cure for hepatitis C. Usually it's a very easy cure. And I recommend everybody who was born between the age between 1945 and 1965 to get screened for hepatitis C through their primary doctor so that if they have it, we can treat it.
And there is a cure. That is fantastic. How long has that cure been? 7 years, you say? Eight years?
There have been different forms of cure for many years, but the good ones, the ones that are really effective and really easy to do, have been there for the last 6 to 7 years.
I got you. I understand. Well, good. That's very good news. Tell me about Crohn's disease. First off, I don't know what that is. What is Crohn's disease?
When your body has an immune reaction that is somewhat attacking its own organs, and when that organ happens to be the small intestine or the colon, we can have something called as Crohn's disease. Now, this can form ulcers in your intestines. This can form ulcers that bleed. This can form fistulas that start from the intestine and go into your skin. Or it can cause blockages when it causes a stricture. That, in a nutshell, is Crohn's disease. Young people have a tendency to develop this, but we have seen some of the Crohn's being diagnosed in their 40s, 50s, and I have diagnosed it as late as 80s. So it's something that we keep in mind whenever patients come with any change in bowel habits, bleeding, abdominal pain, and any other abdominal symptoms. We keep this as one of the things that we look for.
For Crohn's disease, what kind of a treatment is there? I'm sure there is. Is there a treatment that seems to be working?
Yes. Crohn's disease can be very mild or it can be very severe. Based on your severity, based on how much of your intestine is affected and what way it is affected, we can start with medications that you take by mouth, medications that you inject, like the advertisements that you see on TV. Or sometimes it might need surgery and endoscopic interventions to open up a blockage or something like that. Crohn's disease is something that you usually will need lifelong treatment. So it is very important to diagnose it early and get started on the treatment early so that you don't have the symptoms progress into a stage where you need surgery or other complications which need, you know, extensive increase in your medications or surgeries.
Something else I've heard of. What is ulcerative colitis?
So this is a condition which is very similar to Crohn's, but when it affects only the colon, it's called ulcerative colitis. Some people might say it's a slightly milder version of Crohn's, but as far as the treatments go, they're almost similar to the same medications that we use in Crohn's disease. And you'll need a gastroenterologist to work you up and rule out Crohn's before making this diagnosis.
I understand. And that's something you guys can do.
We do that. All four of us have very good experience in treating both ulcerative colitis as well as Crohn's disease.
Very good. So people who are having these symptoms here in this age of COVID-19, what should they do about going into the doctor, especially if they're afraid to go?
That's a very good question, and it's a very valid fear right now. But there, we are offering options. First of all, we are following extra precautions both in our offices as well as the endoscopy suite, as we talked about earlier. The second thing is we offer telehealth for patients to be seen initially. You know, we can see them over the video conferencing or even on a telephone call just to make sure that that's not the patient who needs to come in sooner than later. I do not think the COVID era is going to end anytime in the next week or two. So it is important not to delay your care too much. At least talk to a doctor, do a telehealth appointment. If not coming to the office, make sure that you don't need something to be done sooner than later before it's too late.
Dr. Ashwath, thank you so much for being a guest on Health for Life today.
Thank you. It was great to be here, and I'll see you again soon.
If you have further questions, you can make an appointment with Dr. Ashworth by calling 706-272-4127. That's 706-272-4127. You can also learn more about Hamilton Physician Group by visiting hamiltonhealth.com/gastro. Thank you for listening to Health for Life, a presentation of Hamilton Healthcare System.